British have been told year in, year out, by the BBC, by Sky, by other media outlets, that Israel is on the wrong side of legality, fairness, justice. And the British therefore think, of course I'm going to be compassionate and horrified on behalf of the people who are on the wrong end of the Israelis, who stand for injustice, illegality. The Israelis have never bothered to tell people that everything Israel does is moral. The Israelis, it seems to me, have never had a proper strategy for addressing the ignorance of Britain and the West.
Shalom and welcome to State of a Nation. I'm Elon Levy. Telling Israel's story in this war has been a challenge because it's not just about the facts. It's about a whole frame of reference. It's not just about details. It's about the whole lens through which audiences around the world view those details. And unfortunately for us here in Israel, so many people watching the news aren't even open to hearing facts that support Israel's case because they already believe a story that's stacked against it. That's the case that my guest on this episode makes. Melanie Phillips is a British journalist, broadcaster, and author. She's a weekly columnist for the Times of London, author of the books Londonistan and The World Turned Upside Down, and writes on her own personal blog at melaniephillips.substack.com. She claims that Israel is failing to win public opinion because it doesn't have a proper strategy to address some pretty massive knowledge gaps around the world. She says it's never even tried to make the case for basic facts, and that leaves decent people thinking that they're doing good by taking the Palestinian side in this conflict, a side that she criticizes with a sharp eye and an even sharper tongue. Melanie Phillips joins me now.
Breaking news out of Israel this morning.
Shocking hostage taking.
Hundreds of Israelis are dead.
I want to bring in Israeli government spokesman.
What happens when the four-day pause?
How do you resolve this?
Where does this go?
You can't
Melanie Phillips, welcome to the State of a Nation podcast.
Hello, Elon. Thank you very much for having me on.
I'm happy to have you here because I get to turn the tables now. Do you know why?
Tell me.
Well, I've given so many interviews to British journalists and now I get to interview a British journalist.
Okay, it seems pretty neat.
Seems pretty neat, but I don't think you're representative of the other British journalists who've been a little bit more hostile towards the Israeli position, and I think you're going to be hostile from the other direction now. Because my impression from some of the British journalists I've been interviewed by, not all of them, and I don't want to generalize, sometimes the tone is very condescending, very patronizing, very didactic. From the British journalist, the attitude that I feel sometimes is like they're telling me, you're a very naughty boy, and you know you're a very naughty boy, so now sit on the naughty step and tell me why you've been a very naughty boy. Do you find share that impression of the British media environment?
They take a pretty hostile and aggressive view, attitude towards me, not just over Israel, but over a whole bunch of issues. Because I am known to be the person who allegedly moved from left to right. I've worked for The Guardian for 20 years, and my views did move, but I moved from leftism to sanity.
I want to talk to you a little bit about your intellectual journey, but I'm wondering specifically since October 7th, you famously very strident views, but also you've been on this intellectual journey, and so I'm wondering since October 7th, has anything changed in the way that you see the world in the wake of that earthquake? Has it forced you to revisit some opinions you had before?
Well, this may sound a bit like, you know, my greatest hits revisited, but it's like I've been living through a speeded up version of what I've been trying to say for the last 30 years.
And so you see this as a moment where since October 7th, perhaps your opinions haven't changed. You've doubled down and seen affirmation of what you were saying,
yes,
all along, but you do detect a shift in Western discourse,
yes,
towards reevaluating the Islamist threat?
Yes. Well, not just the Islamist threat, but also what's going on here. I wouldn't like to exaggerate the degree to which that has taken hold in the population, but there is a significant number of people in the, as I would call it, the apolitical part of Britain, who are saying, well, this is appalling. Why are these people screaming in this way? Why are they breaking the law? Why are they all screaming for Hamas when Hamas are actually menacing the Israelis? there's a significant proportion of ordinary Brits who get that. And
what shift do you see then within public discourse there?
And I was also going to say, among the left, there are people who have been struck dumb, literally struck dumb by what they've seen, because, and some of them have the honesty to say, everything that I supported, the people I supported, the cause I supported here in Israel, the Palestinians and so on, has been turned upside down, because I understand the people I supported have been perpetrating this appalling stuff. Now, there are not many of them who have the honesty to say that. Most of those people are trying to turn the narrative upside down again. But events here have actually caused a shift in terms of perhaps producing more confusion than there had been previously.
So how do you see then public attitudes shifting in the West, particularly in Britain, in the wake of the October 7 massacre? Is it just a moment of confusion, or do you see polarization? Or how do you see that? Because we're always trying to be more convincing towards foreign audiences and help to tell Israel's story. And I'm wondering, are the goalposts moving? How has the conversation there been changing in a way that as a spokesman I need to adapt to?
Well, what is so terrifying and sad and tragic is that despite your efforts...
Valiant efforts.
Despite your heroic...
No, don't exaggerate.
Efforts, I've lost count of the number of people who write to me after I've written one of my blog posts. And they've said, I can't believe it. What you've written, I've never heard before. For example, I didn't know that there were so many rockets. I didn't know there were any rockets.
Really? They're not aware that Hamas had fired 12,000 rockets at the Israeli home front in this war.
The media that I'm reading doesn't tell me. I didn't realise that the ordinary Palestinians have been educated or brainwashed over all these years by the Palestinian Authority. No one has told us that. Ever. No one has ever told us that the Jews are the indigenous people of the land. I thought that after the Holocaust, the Jews have been kind of parachuted in from Europe. No one's ever told us this. Now, why haven't they been told? Okay, so...
And it's interesting you say that, because one of the challenges that I confront as a spokesman is that sometimes there is such a massive gulf between what is being reported in the Western media and the story that we tell, that I go on air and I sound like a madman, because I am saying things that are being not only not amplified, but actively denied by a whole alphabet soup of UN agencies and human rights organizations. That simply to shift the story towards what is really happening here on the ground, I sound like I'm coming from way outside of the Overton window.
It's extremely difficult in a situation of crisis like this, where you are necessarily being put in a position of being on the defensive. You have an aggressive BBC Sky interviewer saying, you know, why are you killing all these girls and children? And you have to say, we're not killing them, because this is why we're fighting a just war. The problem goes much further back.
Well, we don't deny that civilians tragically are being killed in this war, but we say there is an address for that. And that address is the terrorist organization that launched this war, that decided to fight this war from inside and under civilian areas. And we're doing everything we can to minimize harm to civilians, without much help, unfortunately, from the UN agencies that are supposed to be protecting them. They've been very resistant to our efforts to keep civilians protected.
Indeed, you do say that. But you're coming in, what I'm saying is you're coming into a situation in which the ground, unfortunately, has already been prepared for you. And it's ground that you don't stand on, because without falling into a terrible deep hole, because the British people have been led to believe over many years that the people who drive the agenda in the Middle East are the Israelis, that the story only kicks off.
Who's been telling them that?
The media.
I mean, it would be lovely if we were driving the agenda, and we're working sleepless days to try to make that happen. But we don't control the media landscape, and we don't control the agenda.
This is true. But the Israelis, it seems to me, have never had a proper strategy for addressing the ignorance of Britain and the West. If it had a proper strategy, it would be being proactive, have been proactive over many years, and it would be seeking to educate the British public.
One of the things I hear is, look, there is suffering, there is a war. People say, we don't care who started it, we don't care, he said, she said, Punch and Judy. How do we make this stop? And I'm wondering whether you think that going back and saying, well, actually, King David and Joshua and in ancient times, and technically succession of empires. No, but I wonder whether it could ever possibly make a difference, whether people care about these long historical arguments.
Yes.
They do?
I know that Israelis find this very hard to believe.
Because it's so obvious to us, but we're just not sure that other people are moved by our same historical narrative.
You've put your finger on it. It is so obvious to us. That is the Israeli problem. Because it's so obvious that we are in the right, because it's so obvious that we have a just and moral cause, we don't have to make that argument. And we don't have to make that argument. We, the Israelis, cannot conceive that anybody can think that it's us committing genocide. So you're starting from an entirely false premise. Now you say, what difference would it make? In a situation of war, it's very difficult to start from scratch, as it were.
Right, this isn't a battle we're going to win in the middle of a war.
Right, but the Israelis have never accepted for a moment that, as far as Britain is concerned, I can only speak about Britain, I don't know about the rest of the West, but as far as Britain is concerned, when you look at sort of ordinary people who are not driven by a sort of left-wing agenda, but just ordinary people who know very little, all they know is what the BBC and Sky tell them and so on, they have a very fixed view in Britain. British character, the British culture is suffused with the fundamental imperative of fairness, right? Justice, law. These things are very important.
Such core elements of the British character.
Right.
Fair play.
And the British have been told year in, year out by the BBC, by Sky, by other newspaper other media outlets that Israel is on the wrong side of legality, fairness, justice. And the British therefore think, obviously, well, you know, I'm a decent, moral British person. I'm driven by conscience and compassion. Of course I'm going to be compassionate and horrified on behalf of the people who are on the wrong end of the Israelis, who stand for injustice, illegality. The Israelis have never bothered to tell people that everything Israel does is moral and just, and this is why. And this goes back a long time, and I've had this conversation with Israelis over the years. Why don't you tell people? And the answer, first of all, they say, well, why should we take any notice of you? You mean you're British. Okay, fine, that's very helpful. But the real answer is, why should we even try?
So I'll say as an Israeli now, we're definitely going to try. But I want to talk just a little bit about the communications in this war specifically, but I'm intrigued by this question of the long-term strategy. What is the core message that Israel needs to be telling about itself to Western audiences, not during times of crisis and adversity?
The most important thing that Israel has, well, one of the most important things that Israel has not told anybody properly is what the people that they are supporting, the people the British are supporting, who are the Palestinian Arabs, what they actually are told and what they think about Jews, not about Israel, about Jews. If people had any idea of what the Palestinian Authority, forget Hamas for a moment, everyone like boo hiss Hamas. Palestinian Authority is fine.
Do you not think they're beginning to pick up on it now with all the revelations about UNRWA and the testimonies at the US House about what is in the UNRWA, which is the PA curriculum?
No, because they don't know about the PA curriculum.
They don't understand where all their tax dollars and euros and pounds have gone into this horrific education system of incitement.
Insofar as they understand any of this, they understand that, if they're that way inclined, they would think, oh, how terrible. Our taxpayers' money has gone into UNRWA, and who knew that UNRWA was in bed with Hamas? First of all, a lot of people don't accept that, but let's assume that people do accept that. That's good. That's an advance. What I'm saying is something different. I'm saying that those people who think that's terrible because they're supporting Hamas and Hamas is terrible, but the Israelis have got to have a Palestinian state because the Palestinian Authority is fine and the Palestinians are basically people who just want to have, a state. Now, what is not understood, what the Israelis have never said, is what the Palestinians as a whole are being taught year in, year out, day in, day out by the Palestinian Authority. They've never been taught about Muslim and Palestinian Arab anti-Semitism. They don't talk about it. Now, it's my view, and I may be wrong, But I think the British, who are fundamentally decent, they know nothing. Now, why do they know nothing? Fault, absolutely, British media. But fault, absolutely, of the Israelis. They've never bothered to tell people. They don't think it's worth their while.
And I think during this war, we are trying, at least in the public relations work that I've been doing as a spokesman, to go on the offensive, to take the battle to the UN agencies that have been covering up for Hamas, covering up the fact that it's waging war out of hospitals and built its headquarters underneath the UNRWA facilities and the tunnels in the schools. One of the reasons that I wanted you on the show is that as a spokesman, I always have to be very careful and measured about what I say, even if I'm going on the offensive. And you've always been much more blunt and saying it as you see it and you call the shot.
People have very little idea of the lies that they're being fed. And the course, the neuralgic issue is, you know, Israel is disproportionately killing Palestinian women and children. And I know that you've made this point, but people really don't understand the numbers game that's being played and the way it's been played and the way it's way these numbers
what do you mean
gamed.
The numbers game?
Well, they know that these are, you know, Hamas statistics.
Yes.
Okay, so if the media are doing their job that they think they're
the same
doing
Hamas
their job,
that claims that it's destroyed 1,000 Israeli tanks, which is of course not credible.
But I'm not aware that the public actually are aware of quite why these statistics are so rubbish.
Go on.
For example, Hamas do not, in their statistics, they do not accept any terrorist, any terrorists.
Right, they make no distinction between civilians and combatants.
Right. Hamas consider all their people civilians, and they consider all the Israelis combatants.
Right.
So they call the hostages prisoners of war.
Right.
But they, in terms of
including those poor children and
yes,
women
they're all prisoners of war.
October 7th.
This point has not been made adequately. But the numbers again, you know, here is the number of rockets, estimated number of Hamas rockets that have fallen short. Here is the number, you know. Then there are the
right, which I also find astonishing, and I mention on occasions that we know, I think, as of the last update a few weeks ago, over 2,000 Hamas rockets had fallen short and exploded in the Gaza Strip. But whatever casualty numbers Hamas has presented, the foreign media will take it for gospel that whatever that number is, Israel is responsible for all of them, as if Hamas hasn't, you know, Hamas rockets haven't been falling inside Gaza.
Okay, so personally, I think that Israel should be, again, part of its sort of strategic approach to the disinformation campaign is to say, is to call people out. Not just say, but Hamas statistics are wrong or false, and this is why. But I think it's very important to break it down all the time so people actually have an understanding of why they're being lied to.
Do you think as a journalist that works to tell an interviewer to try to call them out and engage them in a sort of argument in an interview?
Yes, I do.
It does.
I do. I think people should, you know, if somebody is saying, you know, why are you killing so many women and children? Then you have to say, you know, on what basis do you say that? Because it's not true. Because it's, you know, the proportion of, again, a key fact which people generally don't know, and I'm sure you've made it, but people need to be reminded. Even according to the numbers that we're being told, which are probably inaccurate, the best estimate is something like one terrorist to three civilians killed.
No, that's far higher estimate. If we take the Israeli number of 12,000 Hamas terrorists killed, then even by their number, we're talking about a much smaller ratio.
Fine. But then the key point is, in every war recently...
One to 1.5.
In every war recently that Britain and America have been involved in, Iraq, Afghanistan, it's 1 to 5.
Much higher, or
higher.
And I made this point in a BBC interview as well. He said, you know, it doesn't look like the Israelis are... either being effective or taking seriously the obligation to reduce civilian casualties. And I said, well, we're doing a darn better job than your government did in the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and ISIS, civilian-to-combatant ratio was much higher.
I'm glad to hear that's being said. I don't think it can be said enough times. But at the same time, I think that the Israelis collectively should be calling out media organisations by name, saying, you know, this is incitement to misrepresent what's happening in Gaza.
Do you think media institutions, media outlets respond to that criticism and demands for clarifications and retractions? Is that effective in holding them to account?
Absolutely, I do.
It is. Why?
Well, because they do not want to have their public or their audience thinking that the public or the audience are being played for suckers, being told lies and so on. It's one thing seeing a spokesman like yourself embattled with an aggressive interviewer, holding the line, these are the facts, very important that you say that. But they're looking at, you know, there is the Sky interviewer, there is Alon Levy, and like, well, I don't know who's telling the truth. That's the sort of reaction. Now,
well, it's worse than that. It's when the Sky interviewer is saying, Hamas told me this, and the UN says the same thing, and a whole alphabet soup of human rights organizations say the same thing, and it's my word as a government spokesman against half of the world. I think viewers know which side they're taking, and that makes my job all the more difficult. And I'm wondering what it is that we don't understand about the starting point with which British or American audiences think about the conflict, about why these organizations that purport to be humanitarian are essentially running interference for Hamas. What do we not understand about how people outside Israel are viewing this conflict?
In Britain, I mean, there is absolutely zero appreciation that they're running interference for Hamas. In Britain,
they don't understand the way that all these UN agencies are running interference for Hamas.
If you're a decent, you know, Christian, God-fearing individual who's pretty apolitical but has a conscience, and, you know, you pass the Oxfam shop, you get the Amnesty International begging bowl in the street, you give because it's for good cause, because it's for Palestinians, and it's for humanitarian purposes. There is zero understanding of the way in which the whole humanitarian industry of NGOs, charities, the major charities, plus, you know, the whole apparatus of human rights law and all the rest of it, has been co-opted completely.
How did that happen? Why have these organizations been co-opted in a way that in this war they are essentially interfering to try to save Hamas's skin after the October 7 massacre and make sure that this war ends with Hamas still on its feet? Because that's to be the logical conclusion of anyone who is trying to demand that this war end with anything other than a total Israeli victory.
Well, I think there are a lot of components for that, and I wouldn't claim to know all of them at all. First of all, a number of them are under the umbrella of the UN. It is a major international world misapprehension that a transnational body like the UN, which is supposed to be in, you know, promoting peace and justice, does that because it's a transnational body.
I see the UN spoken of with so much moral reverence. It's the United Nations has
because
said.
There's a whole orthodoxy in the West that transnational bodies basically promote the brotherhood of man.
By their nature.
Because they're transnational bodies, whereas nations are only interested in their own self-interest and aggression. People don't understand that if you have a transnational body which represents most of the countries of the world, given that most of the countries of the world do not observe human rights.
Oh, yes, they're not exactly liberal democracies, most of the countries in the
right.
world, are
so
they?
So if you have a bunch of kleptocracies, dictatorships, tyrannies and rogue states all getting together, i.e. the UN, it is not surprising that they preside over not peace and justice, but the opposite. So all those, that infrastructure of humanitarian aid, of humanitarian groups, not all, but a significant proportion, is going to be devoted to advancing the interests of people who are hostile to democracy, hostile to human rights, hostile to the Jewish people, hostile to the state of Israel. Nobody in Britain understands that because they're fed all the time by the consensus which says you can't trust governments, any government. You can't trust politicians, any politicians. You can't trust, you certainly can't trust the
spokespeople.
Government. You can't trust the government of Israel because everybody knows that if it wasn't for Netanyahu and his right-wing consensus, his right-wing coalition, there'll be peace tomorrow. Right. So you can't trust any of these, you know, authorities. What can you trust? You trust people who are not government. You trust people who are motivated by compassion. They are backed by the churches. They are backed by the sainted United Nations. They're backed by sainted people. They are sainted people.
Fascinating. And that causes us so much grief because we find that Hamas has been using UNRWA, which is effectively, it is a Hamas front. It is the international branch of the Palestinian nationalist movement, using it not only to store tunnel shafts and weapons in their facilities, but also to launder its information for global consumption. Because Hamas claims something, UNRWA then will put it out in a press release with a blue UN logo. And the next thing we know, the International Court of Justice is quoting an UNRWA allegation. And then it's not Hamas saying, it's not UNRWA saying it, it's the International Court of Justice. And it's causing us very serious problems.
I think it's extremely difficult for the vast majority of people to get their head around this. I mean, it's a terrible thing that we're all facing here, where you have an international establishment ostensibly devoted to peace and justice and humanitarian and compassionate concerns, which is entirely...
which are very noble values. And it would be wonderful if the UN did live up to that very lofty mission.
This is a terrible thing. You have the most noble values which have been turned inside out. And, you know, with the best will in the world, I mean, it's a very difficult thing to convince people of that. But you certainly can't begin to expect people to begin to understand that unless you start telling them.
I want to show you a few cartoons that have come out in Western media over the last few months since the war began and see what you think about them. This is part of how people in the West are receiving messages, cartoons, caricatures, yep. A very effective way to try to put a finger on a particular point that people will instinctively identify with. Let's have a look at some of the images, and I'll use this as an opportunity to plug our podcast on YouTube where people can see it instead of me just describing it. This is a cartoon that went up in the Washington Post. It's a caricature of Hamas spokesman Razi Hamad, the one who famously said that they'll do October 7th again and again, October 7th, October 10th, October 1 million, it's all justified. And we see him here strapping four babies to his chest, a woman in a hijab as well. A portrait of Sheikh Ahmed Yassin, Hamas founder, in the background. And he says, "How dare Israel attack civilians?" While he's strapping these civilians to him as human shields. This caricature, actually, the Washington Post then took down and apologized because they were accused of the racist dehumanization of Palestinians. What do you think about this cartoon?
Well, it's an accurate depiction of reality.
What is accurate about it?
What's accurate is that this guy is taking these people, is using them as human shields, and as not just human shields, but as basically cannon fodder.
By the way, not much of an exaggeration seeing the footage of Hamas terrorists walking around with children hand in hand to try to render themselves immune from Israeli attack, and the way that they have, in a really disgusting and evil way, built all those tunnel shafts inside homes and schools and hospitals and kindergartens
but
and mosques.
But the reaction is what's so concerning.
So why do you think that a caricature like this, which is, I think, so eminently reasonable, would provoke that pushback from people like Owen Jones, saying that this is racist dehumanization? Because, what do they see wrong with this?
Because you cannot criticize Muslims in this way. You cannot say that they are murderous, whatever. Because
obviously, it's not making a generalization. It's speaking very specifically about Hamas having this murderous agenda. So why would people rush to defend Hamas?
Because Hamas are Palestinians. They are Palestinian Muslims. They are, therefore, the victims of the Israelis who are committing genocide themselves and who are committing human rights abuses and who are murdering or killing innocent Palestinian civilians.
And therefore,
civilians.
If they are victims by and definition, so they cannot be criticized?
That's right. No, it not just can't be criticized. This is an abuse of morality. We are living in a situation in which morality has been turned inside out. Language has been turned inside out. Right and wrong have been turned inside out. It is the nearest parallel we have is the Soviet Union, which takes over people's minds so that they no longer, it's not that they no longer can tell the difference between right and wrong, they invert it.
No, clearly people are getting their right and wrong inverse. But I'm still struggling to understand why people would object to this caricature.
Because it's inverted, because everybody knows under this this terrible brainwashing that's happened, everybody knows that Israelis are the cruel people, Israelis are the aggressors, Israelis oppress the Palestinians are victims. Hamas are, you know, we might think, say this point of view, we might think that Hamas go too far, that we can't support the violence, we can't support murder.
But anything that would seem to undermine their victim narrative is therefore anathema.
Absolutely. The key thing about all this, the key thing about the Western media narrative, the Western media inversion of right and wrong, victim and victimizer, genocide and victim and so on, the key thing is that nothing, absolutely nothing, can be allowed to upset the narrative. The narrative is that the Israelis are oppressors, aggressors, victimizers, and that the Jews are all powerful.
Are you confident that putting more facts out in the public sphere can help people change narratives to which they are emotionally already very invested?
Yes, for this reason. First of all, there are a number of decent people who literally know nothing about this and they would be horrified. Secondly,
it's important to remember those are the people that we are appealing to as spokespeople, right. The mum and dad who are washing up dishes and watching their kids and not necessarily people invested in this narrative.
Even the people who are signed up to left-wing narratives of the world in which Israel is obviously a colonizing, oppressive, repressive state.
Yada, yada, yada.
If this kind of material that I'm talking about, Palestinian Media Watch memory, was put into the public domain, and with the Israelis saying, this is what you're supporting, this is what you are promoting. You're not promoting compassion. You are promoting Nazism. You are promoting demonic anti-Semitism. You are promoting genocidal agendas. It leaves those people with nowhere to go.
And it puts them on the back foot.
It puts them absolutely on the back
foot. That's interesting. And for viewers and listeners, everything that Memory, that's M-E-M-R-I and Palestinian Media Watch, all available online, easily accessible for anyone who wants to access and put out these materials themselves.
Because the aim should be to stop people like you from having to be on the back foot all the time and put Israel onto the front foot. And Israel has never understood that. If it does understand it, it can't be. It has never been, never realized how important it is to do that. But it's got the material to hand.
And I could definitely do with all the help I can get to switch from back foot to going on the offensive. We know that it's after the October 7 massacre, other people, UN agencies, human rights organizations, so-called, that owe the world answers so much more than we do as we prosecute what we see as an entirely just war to destroy Hamas and bring back the hostages. Melanie Phillips, thank you very much for joining me on State of a Nation.
Good luck, Elon. It's been very informative
to
talk to you.
Yes, luck. I will need it. Thank you. And that brings us to the end of today's episode of the State of a Nation podcast. As always, please subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts. And we'll be back soon with more fascinating, engaging discussions about the state of our nation. Thanks for tuning in.